Thanks so much, Beth. It's great to be here. Unfortunately, this isn't even my first immunization conference. So one that I've had the opportunity to come to and learn from several times. I, too, really want to start by echoing Bill's words of thanks. You know, what we accomplished as a country could not have happened without partners all over the country, inside and outside of government, at every level. It was an example of really amazing teamwork. I think the first parts of this slide summarize some things that you already know, but I think it's fair to say that we are all just incredibly proud of our accomplishments through this whole H1N1 adventure. We worked with manufacturers in unprecedented ways. We adapted many immunization systems that all of you started, run, improved over time. And we vaccinated a lot of people, and I think we're all very excited and feel very proud of that. What's not on this slide is something that I think you probably started to hear from Bill, and I know that you've heard in other ways, but it's also the case that our government acted in really unprecedented ways. You know, I came back into federal government in July, and had you asked me, could I imagine all levels and all branches of government working together as well and as seamlessly as they did before I came back? No, not in my wildest dreams. And yet it was really amazing to see what happened. You know, at a federal level, we were on the phone together all the time. We had a regular once a week meeting at the White House to talk about where we were headed. And I will say, at our last meeting of these things, Bill and I looked at each other and just were very wistful about the fact that we'd so enjoyed working together across these sectors and across government that we're going to miss each other. So it's nice to share this stage here today. But across the federal government, across HHS, we did the same thing. You know, regular phone calls, regular meetings, sometimes several times a day. The collaboration between federal government and state and local government, I think, was also unprecedented. You've probably heard, but if you didn't, you know, representatives from state and local government were in the Emergency Operations Center at the CDC. We exchanged liaisons all of the time, and so we did everything we could to work on communication being as real-time and as seamless as possible. Clearly, this pandemic tested many of our assumptions about a public health emergency in general and about a pandemic influenza vaccination campaign. And we're now beginning in so many ways to act on lessons learned. I want to remind you all that, you know, since we've had H1N1, we've also had a couple of other public health emergencies that we've needed to deal with. And from my office, something else that really tested us and challenged us in new ways was our response to the earthquake in Haiti. You know, we'd never done a whole out response to an international disaster like this before. Again, in many ways, it was a whole of government response in my office. It was, I think, unprecedented in many ways that already were able to incorporate so many of the lessons that we learned from doing H1N1. And now, as we've been looking at this volcano and the havoc it is raising around the world, number one, I'm really grateful that it wasn't a volcano in the US that erupted. But you know, it's also made me think about and question many of our assumptions. Gosh, is it really feasible to suspend air travel? You know, in the case of a public health emergency, what happens? And it's one thing when you talk about it in theory and make all these contingency plans, and it's another when you look at stranded people and parts of business and industry and supply chains really shutting down around the country. So I think there's an awful lot to learn from all of these things. But certainly back to immunization, I think this has really inspired for all of us a new way of thinking about immunization in this country. I really wanted to talk about the relationship between immunization and preparedness and our preparedness mission. And so I just thought I would lay out a couple of key concepts, some of which I'm sure will be familiar to you at this point. But you know, the first thing is that Americans deserve a level of protection against health threats that are commensurate with the threats that they face, regardless of where they live. It doesn't mean that protection needs to be exactly the same. If you live on an earthquake fault, you prepare kind of differently than you do if you're preparing living in a hurricane zone, for example. But for health and public health threats, everybody deserves an appropriate level of protection. And I think one of the things that we saw is that this profound variation in the state vaccination rates, and even in local vaccination rates, suggests that not everybody is getting that same level of protection, and that, in fact, that we can do better. Clearly, preparedness depends on how well our systems work day to day, and that's why we spend so much time strengthening them, and that's, in fact, why we spend so much time thinking about preparedness investments that have to make our day-to-day systems better. At the end of the day, you know, when the balloon goes up, you respond with what you have at the time, and that's why it's so important that what you have at the time be strong and be practiced. In an emergency, everybody needs to know what to do and to do their part, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in a minute. That we've got to be prepared for all hazards, including those we can't foresee, and again, that these partnerships are essential. So let me talk a little bit about some of the ways forward that I see right now, building on what we've learned from H1N1. First of all, we've got to reduce this variation in health protection. And you know, this isn't a new theme. You know, we see tremendous amount of variation in the healthcare system all over the place, in quality of care, in cost of care, in access to care. And I know you heard Secretary talk about healthcare reform and what it means. Well, one of the things that it means is we have a huge opportunity to reduce a lot of that variation. And I think we have a lot of opportunity to reduce variation in health protection at all levels and in the way our immunization system works at all levels. And doing that means looking hard and learning what works and building on it. And we saw an awful lot about what works and great things to build on through this last year. And then it means strengthening the systems that need it. And finally, it means having a way to know if we're doing better, and having a way to know in much closer to real time, I think, than we've had, if we're doing better. You know, are we doing better at a 6-month or a 1-year interval? And do we know at the end of, for example, an annual flu season, how well we did? Or does it take us long enough into the next flu season that we say, oh, we're probably doing better? I've always been so interested by the fact that, you know, in healthy people, 2000, which I was very involved in last time I was in government, we had a 10-year target for vaccination rates of all different kinds, including flu vaccine. But we didn't have 1-year targets, so we couldn't really see how well we were doing on this glide path. And every time we looked at a number, it was a year or two old, and so we'd say, oh, we think we're doing better now. I would point to the Indian Health Service. It's got an annual target. And in fact, there are incentives built into the way the Indian Health Service works, and their vaccination rates are very high. So there's a model. But I want to highlight here the importance a little bit of metrics. Clearly, building and improving day-to-day systems, central to preparedness, as we've heard. You know, we've all, I think, understand that, you know, had we had better surveillance, we would have had more of a jump start on making vaccine. Not that we would have been able to make it any faster, but we would have had a jump start in making it. And in fact, surveillance for all kinds of health conditions and infectious diseases and others needs to be strong enough so that we have that early warning and that jump start. You've heard, and I think we're all very much celebrating a number of the accomplishments of school-based and school-located immunization and immunization programs, and I'll very much endorse Bill's comments here, and this has been a tremendous partnership. There are things that worked enormously well, a lot of innovation to build on, and I think that that's really incredibly important. In a public health emergency, one in which we have to administer vaccine or any other kind of countermeasure, we also kind of need to know where is the stuff and when did it get used. And I know the secretary has become a big proponent of barcoding vaccine, as have been the rest of us. So that if you had all vaccine barcoded and you could track it through the system, It would help you day to day. You would know where it was. You would know, was it still at a manufacturer? Was it in a distribution system? Was it in a truck? Was it in a provider's office or a school or a pharmacy? And you'd be able to monitor it. And then with barcode readers and new technologies, you could actually transfer a lot of information about when vaccine was administered. We'd be able to know, for example, and much closer to real time, how many doses were administered, even potentially with new technologies, who's getting vaccinated and who isn't. So I think systems for vaccine tracking and administration really throughout the system are nascent. There are some good models out there. Barcoding certainly not a new technology, but it's not one that this particular system has really taken to scale. Along with that, clearly, strengthening health homes and using electronic health records to do that, again, the amount of information that you can collect and transfer. We just talked about, you just asked Bill this question about transferring information from schools. But the more and more we have alternative vaccination sites, alternative vaccination providers, others, you've got to be able to transfer information to somebody's health home about whether their immunizations are up to date, whether they got vaccinated this year, et cetera. And particularly with this investment of electronic health records and sort of watch this space about what's the discussion about meaningful use of health information technology, I would submit to you that there are a lot of really important public health and immunization related meaningful use components of that that we need to keep our eye on that ball. Another thing we can definitely strengthen day to day, and we saw this a lot again this past year, is improving healthcare provider vaccination rates, a place where we know we didn't do as well as we wanted to do. But I know that data presented by some of my former colleagues at this conference suggests that healthcare providers were much more likely to get vaccinated if the systems they worked in, for example, required it in one way or another. And I think that there are some important lessons learned there that we can build upon. Improving routine vaccination rates, especially in minority populations. You know, we've known for a really, really long time that minority populations get vaccinated at much lower rates than others, and we need to do a much better job sort of cracking that nut, you know, breaking out of the box in terms of our understanding of why and what we're going to do about it, and probably doing some things that we haven't done before in terms of much less traditional things, because clearly the system that we're using day in and day out, year after year after year, isn't getting us where we need to go in this realm. And as I alluded to, I think knowing what's going on in closer to real time is also a day-to-day system. And I think we did a lot of innovative things this past year in terms of taking the pulse of the public and understanding their attitudes about vaccination and understanding if people were getting vaccinated, with some new technologies and new ways of doing things that I think hadn't been used before. And again, there's some really great practices to learn from and build on as we go forward. In terms of preparedness, there are some other things I think about. A big one is everybody knowing what their part is and doing their part in this. This is not, you know, preparedness and response, not something that government can do alone. But it really starts, as I think we know, with individuals and families, frankly, embracing prevention and health in everyday lives. And then, in this case, we ask people to do their part, right? Wash their hands, cover their cough, all those great things. Stay home while sick. Keep your kid out of school. And we heard already, and we all know what some of the challenges in that were. But these are basic things that people need to do. And for every different kind of health emergency, there's a little bit of a different part that individuals and the public might do and will need to do. And some of that they can plan for, and people ought to have a plan and be prepared. And some of that has to do with being able to follow public health advice when it's available. Schools and employers, I mean, we've talked some about that already, but they could also support and incentivize vaccination in a whole variety of creative ways, which I think we saw some of again during the past year, and we ought to really build on what works. Healthcare providers and insurers, another group of folks that really need to do their part. And again, I think we saw some of that in different ways. We saw some kinds of healthcare providers stepping up and vaccinating that had never done that before, such as OBGYNs. We saw other kinds of healthcare providers who I think have a lot of room for improvement. Who, me? I'm not going to get vaccinated. I may or may not recommend it for my patients, but I'm not going to get vaccinated. We saw a lot of that kind of behavior. We saw a lot of unwillingness to really embrace a public health role and responsibility here, and I think we could do a much better job engaging the healthcare provider community in this whole both public health mission and in this preparedness mission, because again, at the end of the day, we have to be practiced, and everybody's got to be used to playing these roles and doing their part. It's not just something you can turn on and off in a public health emergency, and I think that we all really learned that. We saw health insurance companies, who are often maligned and challenged for an awful lot of things, really, in this case, step up to the plate, identify high-risk populations, communicate with them, be willing to pay for vaccination, and have a very interesting and robust discussion with the employers who they cover in that regard. They also have a role to play. They also have a role to play in thinking about, well, what should insurance benefits look like to cover you in a public health emergency? You know, whether it's vaccination or taking a medical countermeasure, or whether it's things like, if you evacuate, is it out-of-network care when you have to get medical care? You know, there's a lot of work to do, I think, in this regard. Traditional and alternative vaccinators also play a part, and I think that we've talked a lot about that, and you'll be talking a lot about that at this conference. But in any emergency, play a role. The big box store is another example of folks that really step forward in this regard. They vaccinated, they distributed antivirals, they communicated, they sold an awful lot of alcohol-based hand wash and soap, other kinds of things. And then finally, in this slide, really preparing for all hazards. You know, people ask me what I most worry about as in my job, and the first thing I say is one of the things that surprises me the most is how many earthquakes there are in the world. You know, it's several times a week I get an alert on my BlackBerry to tell me that there's been an earthquake in some remote place, often a place that my geography's not good enough to know where it is, and so it comes with a map. But gosh, there's an awful lot of earthquakes. And there's an awful lot of things that Mother Nature just doles out. But in addition to worrying about bioterrorism and synthetic biology being much more available, I really worry about the fact that Mother Nature has proven herself time and time again to be a really effective bioterrorist, to use the word. And, you know, it's that thing that we've never seen before, that new disease that keeps me up in the middle of the night. And so you know that the Secretary has charged my office with reviewing the countermeasure enterprise and looking at how it is that we develop and make what are called new countermeasures, including vaccines. And one thing that is clear is that we need to have the capability in this nation, and frankly, around the world, to be able to make a vaccine quickly, nimbly, using newer and faster technologies for something we've never seen before. I mean, we made vaccine in record time for H1N1, and it still took too long. We don't want to be in this situation again. So moving forward with newer, more flexible technologies, this is going to take a lot of work on the science end, as well as a bunch of work, I think, on the manufacturing and distribution end to get this done. And finally, really essential to preparedness is building community resilience. You know, I talked already, everybody needs to have a plan and know what to do. And in fact, they shouldn't only be and take responsibility for themselves and their families on this, but they also need to reach out to those who are more vulnerable and need more help, whether it's the electricity-dependent person who lives down the street, or the person in dialysis a block away, or an elderly person who might not even get their walk shoveled in a snowstorm. Whatever it is, people really, we need to create and build a culture where people are networked to one another enough so that they reach out and help not only themselves, but their neighbors in this regard. And then finally, as Bill and Beth and Ann and everybody have said, partnerships are so critical. And they're critical not only across federal government, but at the local level. So many of you reached out and worked with schools, with public health officials, with emergency management officials who you've never worked with before, and immunization programs and emergency management officials working together, that's kind of a new thing. But these partnerships are really critical, and we've now built an awful lot of good ones, and I think we need to build on them and sustain them. Similarly, the partnerships between the public and private sectors, and we talked about some of those, partnerships with clinician communities and doing better there, and with community groups who represent often populations that we don't communicate directly with, that may not trust government, that may have ways for us of reaching lots of different kinds of people with many different cultures, who speak many different languages, who may think about vaccination and immunization differently than we all do. And then partnering on the science side. One of the things about being able to make new vaccines is going to be that we have to have new relationships with academia, new relationships with industry, developing public-private partnerships, bringing small biotech companies together with large established vaccine manufacturers, et cetera, so that we can really accelerate the development and use of those new technologies. Other kinds of science I think that we need and we don't necessarily always think about in the bucket of things that we call science have to do with operations research, the stuff about the logistics and the supply chain, and how do we get it from here to there, because we all know that despite the plans we've had, we were all really challenged about a lot of these logistics. And then for all of the reasons I think we all know and understand, a lot more about social science, communication science, what it takes to motivate people to action. And those are some science investments above and beyond the making the vaccine and the antivirals, and above and beyond the public health science that we're used to in terms of surveillance and others, investments that I think that we need to make. In December, the Secretary released our nation's first ever national health security strategy, which sets a blueprint both for our department and for our country on how to become a more health secure nation. It very much links pretty inextricably our nation's preparedness and our ability to do things like immunize people. It requires the capabilities that begin with surveillance and end with immunization and everything in between, and actually having that stuff to immunize with. So in sum, I think aligning immunization and the preparedness missions make good day-to-day sense for all of us and for all of the kinds of partnerships that we've seen grow and develop over the past year and are represented in this room. Thank you.